Blog Talk Radio.
At the sound of a foghorn.
It plays it twice now. Oh, boy. You gotta love Blog Talk Systems. Anyway, welcome to Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema. We're back! So, this evening we have quite a few different little things we want to talk about. And I'm being joined tonight by Carl Kafer. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Doc. How are you, sir?
I am a little off, but that's my usual thing, so I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to say very good for now.
Well, you know what? You've been a little off for a while. I've known that. You know, I'm a lot off, so, or, you know, whatever. I was going to say lottery ticket, but I don't know where that would go. Anyway.
Well, you know, we do work well together. That's probably why. So we would like to actually start off the show with a dedication and a little talk about Jan Michael Vincent. So, Carl, go for it.
Well, Jan Michael Vincent, probably best known for Airwolf, which was a TV show he did in the 80s. But I grew up with him. Now, I'm older than Doc. And the first time I ever ran across him was there was a TV show called The Banana Splits, which they're going to redo with The Banana Splits as murderers, but never mind.
That's going to be awesome.
And they had, little, like, segments in this. And one of them was Danger Island. And that was the first time I ever saw Jan Michael Vincent as a teenager. And but where it really comes into play for me is the 70s. Jan had a run in the 1972 to 1980 that anybody would want. And the first really big film he did was The Mechanic with Charles Bronson. Do you know this film?
I have heard about it. I have not seen it, and I know that there was a recent remake that wasn't very good. But I've heard the original one with Charles Bronson was very, very good.
Oh, it's magnificent. Basically, the story is Charles Bronson is a hitman, and through wheeling his way in, Jan Michael Vincent becomes his protege. And it's a real, real cat and mouse chess game, and it's really good. Okay? Now, he followed that up with a run of films, Buster and Billy, which he played, you know, which is a teenage love story tragedy. Bite the Bullet, a nice little, it's a pretty big Western. Then White Line Fever, which is a big drive-in film, and Shadow of the Hawk, Canadian film, and ending up, well, actually, then going into Damnation Alley, which is the funny thing about Damnation Alley, it was a sci-fi picture with George Peppard, and Universal picked that as the big summer movie instead of Star Wars. That was
Yeah, I know. I've seen Damnation Alley. It's okay, but it's no Star Wars. Oh, man. Did they screw
not
that
even
up?
Close. I do like the cockroaches. I like the cockroaches. But then came the big surfing movie he did called Big Wednesday by John Milius. And that had Gary Busey in it, and then he was in Hooper with Burt Reynolds, and then the last one would be Defiance, which is a good little trucker movie. Problem with him, particularly after Airwolf, and even before then, was drugs. Unfortunately, he had major alcohol and cocaine problems. And in the 90s, he had like four car accidents in a row where he was drunk driving. He had a major health problems, plus also had one of his legs amputated because of an accident. And it became very tragic. I have a friend of mine from high school by the name of Kat Campbell, and she's out on the West Coast, and she messaged me once he died and said she saw him about 6 months before he passed, and he was in really bad shape. So, you know, as we look at stardom and as we look at fame, there's definitely a dark side to it, and unfortunately Jan Michael Vincent knew that dark side too well. But for those of us that remember him in the 60s and 70s like I do, you know, we'll never forget him. And our hearts go out to the family, and certainly prayers for Jan in the afterlife. May he find the peace he never did on this earth. And rest in peace. And that's what I got.
Yeah, and I was born in 1980, so I know his role in Airwolf very, very well. And he was actually on in a, I think it's a fun little cheesy sequel of a movie called Extro 2. There's nothing really spectacular about Extro 2, honestly, except for they use the same, I think they call it auto guns, the ones that have the harness that have the hydraulics and stuff that they used in the
right.
original and Aliens. So I think that was like the most standout feature about Extra 2. Besides, it's just fun if you have it on for background noise. It's pretty good. I know. No.
Okay, finish up. I'm sorry. I was just going to add something else.
Just finishing up.
Oh, okay. His last film of note that he did was Buffalo 66, and that was 1998. He was in a lot of direct-to-video stuff in the 90s, which I do not know. So I can't mention that at all, like Extro 2, In Gold We Trust, Raw Nerve. I know nothing of these films. But where I remember him specifically is in the 70s. And all those films that I mentioned, starting with, of course, Mechanic, and going on to Buster and Billy, Bite the Bullet, White Line Fever, Baby Blue Marine, Shadow of the Hawk, Vigilante Force, Damnation Alley, Big Wednesday, Hooper, and Defiance. That's a run any actor would have liked, and he did really well. And so that, you know, that's how I always remember Jan Michael Vincent.
Oh, thank you for talking about Jan Michael Vincent. Now, up next, I've actually gotten a couple messages, and I've been asked about this upcoming subject in person several times, and I was asked if Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema will be doing any form of review of Captain Marvel. And the big answer to that is, nope, we're not. We're not even going to touch it. It's not worth it. Mostly because of all the chaos and drama and politicizing of Captain Marvel and of Brie Larson and things that she has said, what have you. We don't want to get involved in that. We're not going to even touch it. Even if I did go and see it, I wouldn't talk about it because, you know, guaranteed, we talk about it here, you know, like let's say maybe there's a part of the movie that was like kind of boring, we didn't like it, and that would just get blown up and twisted into something that it really wasn't. So we are not taking that risk. We will not, emphasis on not, be talking about Captain Marvel or reviewing Captain Marvel. Now, if any of my podcasting cohorts want to, go right ahead. I'll be right here with you, and I'm not going to say a word because I'm not even going to touch it. Okay, next up. Oh boy, this is another touchy one. I just saw the little 2-minute trailer preview, something special or whatever, for Disney's live action version of Aladdin with Will Smith. I'm going to start out with the good, and then I'm going to go into my first impression of the trailer. I'll be honest, Will Smith does a good job as the genie. He's got the speed, he's got the beats, the vocalization beats. You know, I think he's going to do very well in the role, honestly, because he's got the facial expressions, he's got the sense of humor for it. But he's actually said that he doesn't want to replace Robin Williams. He wants to do his own version of the genie. And honestly, there's no replacing Robin Williams, because he was pure insanity in human form when it comes to humor. And I love the man. But I definitely give a lot of props and a lot of respect to Will Smith for taking on a project like this and knowing that there's going to be a lot of backlash and people speaking negatively about the movie. Now, the negative. Oh, boy. The negative actually has nothing to do with Will Smith. I watched this trailer, and I literally said, holy crap, this looks exactly like an Asylum flick, or maybe something from Brain Damage Films or Camp Films that would be shown in the Sci-Fi Channel. I was just like, what the hell? Everything is basically CG, and it looks ridiculous. It looks like something you can see on a Sci-Fi Channel for a low-budget Asylum flick. And I know people are like, I can't believe you said this. Yeah. That's my opinion. It may look better to everyone else, but if you're going to make a movie like Aladdin again, with that amount of CG, it was about 80% CG. That's movie graphics, imaging, whatever that. Just make a CGI animated Aladdin film, contact Pixar and say, hey, guys, this is what we're going to do. And just do it that way. I would actually see this working a lot better in that form. But yeah, it looks like an Asylum film. And you know, I'll be honest with you, I love Asylum films, especially with their monster flicks that, like I said, hit the Sci-Fi Channel. They are so silly, they're so fun, they're so out there that they work. But this is Disney, a multi-billion-dollar corporation that's got its fingers everywhere and influence in all over the face of the planet. I'm also not a big fan of Disney, but this isn't actually coming into my thoughts about what this looked like. It's no thank you. It's nothing to do with Will Smith. Like I said, I thought he did very well, but just it looks ridiculous to me. And now I sound like, you know, I saw the original back in the 1990s and has it into that. No, it's not. Tell you what, it's not ruining my childhood, because I'll be honest with you, I don't remember my childhood. I remember I had toys and I had family. That's it. So don't blame it on that. Okay.
So can I jump in here for a second, Doc?
Absolutely, sir. Go for it.
Okay. My take on this is a little different. It's not so much with the trailer or the movie itself. But if you have seen the trend, they're doing live-action films of everything that was an animated film, okay? Lion King, they're doing Dumbo, they're doing this. And it's just like, will you stop this, please? When are you going to stop cannibalizing yourself? When are you going to start thinking of something original? Going to take, you know, you go all the way in the back catalog and find Rover Dangerfield and do a fucking live action for that? Seriously? Stop it with this, please. Okay, I'm done. Sorry about the F word.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm trying my best not to unleash the F bombs tonight, but we're all done with the frustrating section now. So, yeah, Aladdin, not so much, but you know, it just seems to me that Hollywood is completely out of ideas. They're bringing back older films and making them new, which just doesn't work. And this is why we need to keep the indie film studios up and running. We need to keep the indie filmmakers up and running. We need to stop downloading their stuff, unless it's from their sites and it's licensed through them. We need to keep buying and paying for the DVDs, the Blu-rays, the VHS. Yes, VHS still exists. The LP soundtracks of the independent studios, independent filmmakers, because we need them. They are making better movies than Hollywood. The special effects may not be way up there. The plots may be a little silly or whatever, but I'd rather sit through, you know, some... I'd rather sit through a Ugandan war movie made there that has got the budget of $50 than through some of the bigger movies that are coming out of Hollywood nowadays. Because the filmmakers from Uganda actually try their best. Hollywood is just, oh, here's a bunch of money we're going to throw it. We're going to throw into this. We're going to use CGI and everything. Blah, 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 blah. And actually, that brings into the video game industry, but that's a rant for another show. So, okay. Let's hop over to the subject at hand. So this is the Hammer Good, one of actually multiple Hammer Goodies episodes. Now, in this one, this tonight's show, we're actually going to talk about, excuse me, I had the hiccups, three Hammer films that are considered horror, sci-fi, and suspense that have nothing to do with Dracula, The Mummy, The Reptile, Rasputin. It's more of the early Hammer films that are all in black and white. And like I said, they don't deal with monsters per se. But they all, two of these movies actually deal with the monsters that are human. And, you know, through scientists and murders and all that sort of stuff. So the first movie I'd like to talk about is called The Damned. That's the original title in England. When the movie came here to the States, it was called These Are the Damned. Basically, it's... Oh, dramatic pause. Sorry, I had to. Now, The Damned is about a gentleman who comes to England for a vacation, meets up with a rather attractive woman whose brother happens to be the leader of a biker gang who beats him up. But that's... We're going to move on to past the more dramatic stuff and into the actual meat of the plot. The main character and this woman that he meets go exploring, and they wander into a series of caves, and they find children in these caves, set up places where these children live. All sorts of strange things are going on. These children are being taught different things, and it's just very eerie, and almost it really feels like something out of the of course, the Wall would be kind of a cheesy reference, but it actually works because every single one of these students have the, you know, uniforms on. They get taught through television monitors, and something a little suspicious happens whenever anyone comes in to check on them. These people have radiation suits on, but there's no talk about a radiation leak. There's no talk about, you know, atomic testing. There's nothing. So as we move on to the plot a little bit, there's a couple of really, there's some very, very dark things that happen to our heroes. And it's because they tried to help these children. You wouldn't expect, you know, with American movies that are like horror, suspense or something, you know, you have American, in these American films, it kind of has like a good ending, like, you know, the couple helps the ghost count all the fibers in the rug, and then the ghost goes to heaven or whatever. You know, it's kind of got this heartwarming ending thing. Well, a lot of European films end badly for their characters. I'm not going to say how, but I'm just going to say that in the process of trying to help these children, our heroes are poisoned, and they never even realize them until the end. And it's a bleak freaking movie. I mean, just the end, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. So, what did you think of it, Carl?
Well, this is an important film. There's a number of reasons for that. One thing is that the leader of the biker gang is Oliver Reed. Was one of his first film roles.
Mm-hmm.
And he is scary in this. He's scary. The film itself is written and based on a teleplay by Nigel Neal, who was the dean of British science fiction. He did the Quatermass films. He did a number of things. And the director is a gentleman by the name of Joseph Losey. Joseph Losey was an American expatriate who was driven out because of McCarthyism and ended up in England. Another thing about Joseph Losey is that he was gay. And so in the original British cut, there's a lot of gay subtext in it. Particularly with the Oliver Reed character. And so it's really something special. This is, you know, you gave a synopsis, but the synopsis doesn't do it justice because the way that it's photographed, the way that it's done and that just magnifies the creep factor beyond belief. It's just a really unsettling film. It's one of those ones that you get goosebumps or you get the chill up the spine, that type of thing. And it's a really important film. Unfortunately, it was basically forgotten at the time and was a bomb at the time here in the U.S. because they cut it down to like 79 minutes and it made no sense. So you have to see the English version of this. But it is a hell of a film. And recommended highly. So there, that's what I got to say.
Yeah. And the thing is about Hammer films is that they all have this quality to them. I don't know. I said this on our podcast with Kelly Robinson on Sunday, that there's something dreamlike with these movies. I don't know if it's the type of film that they used or if it was the conversion from PAL to NTSC. That's for home video releases, DVD, VHS, and so on. But there is just, the slower frame rate that they use, I just don't know. But it just seemed very surreal, almost like a really bad acid trip, but without all the colors and everything, without everything just going absolutely batshit. But it was just very surreal. Do you have any ideas why the Hammer is so good at that?
Well, you know, we're talking about the black and white films. So
right.
Take a look at the cinematographer. It's the cinematography and the use of shadows and the going back, particularly in the cave sequence, for example. There are a lot of things that are sort of suggested, but you don't see clearly right at the beginning.
Yes.
And all of this is due to the cinematography and to the control of the lighting and all that. So to me, it's not the film stock. It's the cinematography. That's what I would say. Now, of course, film stock goes into it, but
right.
You know, I credit that all to the cinematography.
Okay. Yeah, it's a. You definitely have to see The Damned. It's just called The Damned. I'm not sure if it's if they put it into the DVD collection that Hammer put out in the last couple of years. It's like 21 DVDs. I'm not sure if it's in there. But you can find it here in the States as These Are the Damned. The releases on it aren't so good because, like Carl said, it kind of dropped into obscurity for a while. But now that Hammer has had a bit of a resurgence because they've produced several new movies over the last few years, the interest in the older films has come back in. So you might be able to find it pretty soon because Shout Factory is re-releasing Hammer films on Blu-ray. So you never know, you might get a copy, you might have a release of it fairly soon, which would be great. Now, next up, I watched a movie called The Snorkel. Yeah, I was it's a hammer movie, like we're talking about. It's in black and white. And I was thinking, you know, this is going to be like a high seas adventure, you know, murder on the reef type thing. Oh, no. Yes, there is a diver. Yes, there is some swimming. But there has nothing to do with murder on the high seas. Basically, the movie just kind of starts. There's no intro to it. It's just like, poof, there you are. And you're watching a guy set up a murder of his wife. He was sealing up all the windows and doors from the inside. He drugged his wife with some tainted milk or something. I don't know exactly what the chemical he put into it. And he released it. The lights in his home are all gas, which it was apparently at the time that was a big thing in Italy. And because electric was was very expensive at the time. So, you know, he knocks out his wife. She's on the couch. And basically you watch the whole preparation of her murder. And he uses a snorkel with air tubes that go outside of the house. And he hides under the floorboards with a little trap door. And it's basically the whole rest of the movie is his stepdaughter trying to prove that he killed her father, number one, which we did not see, and number two, that her stepfather killed her mother. And it's kind of slow moving at the beginning, but when the stepfather starts realizing that the daughter is beginning to figure things out, he poisons her dog, then it's this huge game of cat and mouse, but it's very subtle at the beginning, but then it starts getting more and more vicious. And this guy is really good at hiding his tracks. He tries to drown his daughter once while she's out swimming. And then, you know, nobody believes her because this is a teenager. Her name is Candy. She's a teenager in this film. And, you know, the whole 1950s thing, 1950s and 60s is, oh, you're a teenager. Oh, you're a girl. Yeah, we don't have to solicit anything you said because you're a girl, number one. Number two, you're a teenager. And number three, you're mad. You're going mad. Just a reminder to all
of you. It's called gaslighting.
Yes, it's called gaslighting. I was just going to say that. It's called gaslighting, basically trying to make somebody go insane or think they're insane. Back in the 1950s, and actually earlier than that, society was way different. I do not personally believe in this, but this is the way things were back in the 60s down through the 20s, that women were incredibly sensitive and they were mentally unstable enough that if you poked them in the right direction, they would go mad, air quotes mad. Now, the meaning of mad nowadays is I'm angry. Mad back in those days was that there was a psychological break and you were not sane. That's what we're talking about. Now, like I said, the cat and mouse, between the predator and the prey scenes in this movie are just so good. And the last 10 minutes, you don't know who's going to win. I was literally sitting on my couch, Spooky was with me, and I'm like, oh my God, she can do it, she can do it, she can survive this. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just really exciting and really edge of my seat, white knuckling it, hoping that Candy was going to make it and she was going to prove that her stepfather was a murderer. Now, here's the thing. This is one of those movies that it has sort of a happy ending, but the ending isn't that happy. It's kind of it's not as bleak as The Damned, but it's rather dark. So what do you do with somebody who's mad? You bring them to they didn't call them an asylum back in the day. What they call the
asylum. That works.
So
it works.
I'm not gonna ruin the rest of the ending, but people get what they deserve and unfortunately somebody gets put in asylum. But, you know, it's all alluded to. But, man, the amount of tension in this movie was just, it was through the roof. And I haven't gotten that excited over a movie like this in years. I was just like, this was so exciting. The cinematography was great. The use of shadows was fantastic. The camera angles were very good. There's a lot of really tight in shots, and, you know, then which definitely like emphasized the darkness of the situation. And the guy who I cannot remember his name for the life of me, the gentleman who played Candy's stepfather, had this look on his face, this gleeful, evil, I'm going to make you suffer, and I'm going to make you, and I'm going to kill you look. That was just evil perfection. And it put a smile on my face because that's quality acting. And the young lady who played Candy did a fantastic job. I was absolutely blown away by the acting, the cinematography, and just the level of tension. And oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, at the end was fabulous.
Absolutely. By the way, I have the cast here. The stepfather was Peter Van Eck, who's the actor.
Yeah.
And Candy was Mandy Miller. These are not well-known actors, at least not to me. So, you know, this was one of their B-movies, but I've heard that nothing but good things. I haven't actually seen this, so I can't say anything other than that.
Well, the cool thing is about The Snorkel is it's actually been put out two separate times here in the States. There was a Hammer collection that came out about back in 2005, 2006 on DVD, which is somewhat expensive, but there's also a Mill Creek because Echo Bridge doesn't have a Mill Creek collection of Hammer films that you can get for like $8, and it comes with around 8 movies on 2 discs. It's got the Gorgon and The Snorkel is actually on there, and it is so good. I would definitely, definitely, definitely check it out. So I give that 10 out of 5. I enjoyed it so much. And I really wasn't expecting much because I'm not into like the thriller murder movies. I'm more into the monsters and mayhem type stuff. But man, that was good. Okay, and our next movie is Never Take Sweets from a Stranger, which was released here in the States as Never Take Candy from a Stranger. Oh my freaking God, this movie is nuts. It is evil. But when I say evil, it's not like, you know, satanic or whatever. It's a movie about child abuse and, you know, sexual predators of children. And it's horrifying. And, you know, back in the time when this was made in 1960, you know, the British society was, you know, they wouldn't talk about anything that happens to kids. They wouldn't even recognize it. It was a huge taboo. If a child was hurt by someone, nothing would be done. Nobody would believe the child because, oh, in this society, we don't do that. Guess what? It happens. And Never Take Sweets from a Stranger. Just the main bad guy in this movie, the pedo in this movie, to be blunt, doesn't say a word. But he is one of the most horrifying, most despicable characters I have ever seen in the movie. You know, you don't see anything happen to the children, but you see the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this a family moves into town, and creepy things start happening to the kids, and they try to report these incidents to the authorities, and basically everybody knows everybody, and you know, that type of thing. It's a small town in England, and we don't talk about these things. But basically, it gets to the point where there's a little bit of court trial, and basically the family gets pushed out of town. But in the process of this happening, one of their daughters disappears. And the ending, I'm not going to say what happens, but I'm just going to say that the ending is chilling. It was just like, I literally sat there with my eyes open and my dog agape going, holy shit, they don't do this. You know, in movies of this time period, nothing like that would happen to a child or any young person. Yes, you had, the Martians chasing down teenagers, but the people who played teenagers are mostly like 25 to 30 years old. But in this movie, it was just like, oh my God, I was repulsed. I was horrified. I was blown away by how much it's, I mean, hell, it's got a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb. And I'm literally just sitting here going, more people should see this movie just because of the historical, the whole historical thing about it was that this movie was suppressed after it was released. Because a society in England didn't want to deal with what was happening to children at the time. They cared, but because it wasn't prim and proper, to the BBC, they wouldn't deal with it. This movie was a plea for English society to start dealing with what was happening to children and to stop it. It's just so it was just like, wow. I mean, seriously. Oh, and I'll be honest with you, nothing graphically happens in the film, but it is so disturbing that if you have a weak heart or very, very sensitive, I would avoid it. But it's definitely historically relevant. And the American cut is because, well, just the way we re-edited it. Isn't as good, and it kind of diminishes the shock and the power of it. It kind of goes, oh, okay, well, we went from big, huge, scary, we got to take care of business, to it's rather milquetoast. I just want to say one more thing. The scene of the air quotes monster chasing a child through the woods, just walking slowly, not saying a word, is chilled me to the bones. I was just so, I'll use modern lingo, so much wow at the quality of this movie. Okay, go ahead, Carl.
Well, there's a couple things I want to say about this film. There were a bunch of films in the late 50s, early 60s that Britain produced that really pushed envelopes, both in terms of this, particularly child molestation. They had a couple of films like The Servant about being homosexual. That's what they called it at the time, but being gay and closeted and things like that, and class relations and some really, really, touchy stuff. And this was one of them. Now, you mentioned something. I'm glad you mentioned it. You talked about the scene in the woods where he's tracking the girl and following the girl. Does that remind you of anything like 20 years later?
It's sort of my horrible horrors side just popped in and said, there's a lot of slashers that kind of follow that formula where the victim is, sorry, I'm using that word, is running away from the slasher guy who's going, what they do. And they're running, they're frantic, they're falling, they're getting back up. And, like Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers, you know, just is slowly following them at their own pace. They know that they'll get there. Was that what you're looking
right.
for?
Well, the reason I mentioned that, and you nailed it, okay? The reason I mentioned it is John Carpenter has said in interviews that Never Take Candy from a Stranger was a definite influence on Halloween. So I didn't know if you knew that or not.
I did. I actually watched, I read part of that, and I think he said that in an interview on one of the Blu-ray sets for Halloween.
Right.
Yeah. It's a horrifying little movie that, you know, the subject matter is extreme, but this is a movie that needs to be seen for its historical significance in tackling this subject matter in the 1960s.
And the other thing too is I just want to jump in one more time. You know,
sure.
They do this film without any real violence. Everything is implied. And it just goes to show you that you don't need to show these things. You see the aftermath. You know, you don't need to be graphic to really, really, you know, make you uncomfortable. In this movie, I don't think it's scary as more as it makes you real feel dirty and uncomfortable. And I mean that as a sincere compliment because they do their job well. This is an excellent film. Not something you want to watch every week, trust me. But
no,
it's really well done.
This is one of the movies that I feel you should see at least once in your life. You know, so you can experience it. The subject matter is horrific, out of doubt. But the way it's done, it's quality. It's a quality film. Carl said, it's horrific because it's not what you see, but it's what's implied and what your mind makes you think of. Which is I know that's a gross way of looking at it, but that's what this film was made to do. It was made to make it, you know, bring awareness to this is happening. We need to stop it. And, you know, we need to get rid of, we need to annihilate the whole, you know, the good old boy thing, you know, the good old boys pact. You know, you have these horrible people that need to be stopped and you need to do everything in your power, even if, and investigate, do what needs to be done before it gets worse. And that's Don't Take Sweets from a Stranger. Oh, just thinking about it, it's like, ugh. But it's a very, very well done film. I know I keep saying that, and it makes me uncomfortable to say that because, like I said, of the subject matter. But I was just like, this is so dark. This is bleak. This is like an end of the world. Well, the end of one family's world film. So there. Anyway,
yep.
I think we need to bring the mood back to something more positive here because we really went very dark for the last few minutes here. Yeah. We're definitely going to continue the Hammer Horror Month for the rest of the month. Next week's episode, we're going to go into more of the monsters and mayhem of the Hammer films, which are not as dark. They have plenty of lovely, lovely women, great monsters, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, and we're gonna have more shows, and I'm gonna see if we can work in a live watch for the Sludge Pit. And I think we're definitely gonna have a lot of fun this month with the Hammer films.
Yeah, I got a theme song for you for the Hammer films. Yeah.
You do?
Thanks for the memories. Those lovely... Never mind.
Well, you know, there was actually a band called Warfare that did a whole album dedicated to Hammer films. And they were kind of like a 80s goth hard rock band, and it was pretty cool. I actually have the album, believe it or not. I went through every single one of my hard drives, and I found all of my soundtracks. You know, soundtracks to King Kong Escapes. I've got a couple Hammer soundtracks in there. Aliens, one, you know, all sorts of cool stuff. I'll have to post which ones I have. I actually found, believe it or not, I have part of the soundtrack to Killdozer.
Wow. That's random.
That's obscure. Yeah, really.
Yeah, that's pretty damn random.
Killdozer was a made-for-TV movie about a killer bulldozer. Believe it or not, kiddos, it exists.
I remember watching it on TV.
You know, I actually got it came out before I was invented, but I was at, like I mentioned, I'm not going to mention any names because at the time there were a lot of gray market, black market DVDs and stuff floating around because I don't want anybody to get in trouble. But I actually got a copy of it on a burned DVD, and I watched it about 5 minutes after I got it because I went to my hotel room and I went, this is freaking awesome. An alien-possessed killer bulldozer. Dude.
Yes.
You know, we should do a live watch on this one. Seriously, because it's on YouTube.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, that's part. I know that's on the ISF playlist. You know, I made sure it was on the ISF playlist. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's a silly little weird 70s movie that, you know, the 70s made-for-TV movies are a real blast. And we'll definitely have to do a show about those sometime soon.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we hit these three Hammer movies pretty hard. And I would definitely suggest...
You hit them with a hammer. Well,
oh, you hit the... nail on the...
You know, that was... The reaction should not be that... You know, wait for it. That should have been, oh, God bless it, Carl. Why do you do the puns? Yeah, never mind.
Well, you know, in one of the groups, did you see the pun that I made about I'm in a group and one of the other members posted this thing saying, so where's the mathematician in the group? And my reply was, that's a real calculated question.
Oh, that's bad. I like it. I like it. You're learning.
And you know what their comment was? It said, you win. It's like, this is the best comment in this thread. I'm like, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's always nice when you win. It doesn't happen too often with me, but every so often.
Yeah, we have some, we're really going to hammer it home on this one. Oh, another one. Actually, I think you just said that, didn't you? Or something close to it.
Yes, I did.
Well, anyway. Okay. Well, everybody, that was Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema for this evening. And we shall return. Something's going on here. Okay, I had a little hiccup in the studio. It works perfectly fine because we're actually ending the show now. So thank you for listening in. Carl, thank you so much for being my partner on Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema. And we will be...
Okay, well, before we go... Before we go,
yes.
let's say a couple things. You know, Uncle Carl tells you to say something.
Oh, right. Uncle Carl is swinging a very large hammer at my head when he's telling me this. That Doc, you have to promote. Okay, I'll promote. And I have to pull up the email. It'll just be a second because I'm not used to this. Let me see here. Yeah.
I have it memorized, by the way.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well, then. Basically, I have to promote, because Uncle Carl is so right about this. I, Doc Sludge, my real name is Eric Omland, and I was nominated for a Rondo Award for Monster Kid of the Year. And I think that's really, really awesome. And I was nominated by Joey Vento, and Joey has been nominated for a couple things himself for the Rondo Awards, and also a bunch of our friends have. And I'd like to ask you to vote for myself and everyone who was nominated. So yeah, it'd be pretty cool to be a Rondo Award winner, and that's something really, really big. And I promise that we'll keep up the good monster stuff. So, Carl, you have the email, sir.
Well, I have the email. I forget who it is, but the email is Taraco, T-A-R-A-C-O, at AOL.com.
Yep, it's David at T-A-R-A-C-O at AOL.com. And vote for me for Monster Kid of the Year. And also, Carl Kafer and Deviant Legion Network.
No, don't say it. Don't vote for me.
No, that's okay. Sorry.
If you're going to vote for anyone, say Deviant Legion Network.
Yes.
But this is yours, Doc. This is yours.
I'm so not used to this. And, okay.
I know.
Little self history about me. I'm not used to being recognized for pretty much anything, and this is a new thing for me. So I really appreciate, you know, just being nominated is such an honor. And you know, Joey Vento nominated me, and I'll tell you, Joey is family, and he's part of the crew here, and him and his family are just so wonderful, and I'm just so thrilled by being, you know, part of, you know, the stuff that everything that we do. I really am. And I'm getting.
Well, you know, the nice thing about it, Doc, is you're part of a family, and that's what Joey, in nominating you, really is saying, that you're part of the family, and I think that's something that's a wonderful thing, and it's a great honor, for Deviant Legion, that you're being nominated. So that I think is wonderful. So, what do you have planned for next week? You're going to do more Hammer, correct?
We're going to be doing more Hammer. I have to talk to a guest to see how we're going to be able to pull that off for this weekend. But we're either going to do like the monster horror Hammer films, or we're going to do a live watch. It's going to be one of the two. I will let everybody know as soon as possible. I have to talk to my crew, our crew here, and also our guest that we just had, Kelly Robinson, who was awesome on our show on Sunday. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, we'll definitely. She's so cool. You know?
Yeah, she is.
We'll definitely,
she is. She's very cool.
We'll definitely be posting
on, she even puts up with me and my bad puns. No, never mind.
well, I know
now Thursday, Chrissy is going to have a show. I'm still not sure what it's going to be. But on Friday, we have a very, very special show on the Cavern. And it's all the lesbians I have loved over the years. And what it is we're in the middle of Women's Month. And so this particular episode will be women of the LGBT community who have made a difference. Also people that I've known in my life that have made a difference. There's been a joke throughout my time here on Earth that I've collected lesbians, and maybe that's true, but it's something that I think we need to do to really talk about and shine a light on some of the great LGBT women in history. So that's what we're going to do on Friday. Now, Saturday, it's not confirmed yet, but Mika will be doing a show either this Saturday or next Saturday on women for Women's Month and famous women that she admires and so on and so forth. So, and she'll have a couple guests on there. I have to get to her. But that's what we have planned for this week. And so anything else, Doc, that you can think of?
No, I think that pretty much covered it. And I really enjoy doing these movie review shows every Tuesday. So keep on listening, and we'll keep on bringing the goodness to your ears. Or in this case, the Hammer I can't make a pun with that. But anyway. Well, I appreciate you listening. And Carl, thank you so much for being on the show and being Uncle Carl too. A big, huge thank you.
Yes, this is true. I just want you to know I'm sick of all these hammer puns, okay? I'm sick of them.
Sickle, oh, hammer, sickle. Oh, now you're rushing to a conclusion.
Oh! Oh! Yes!
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, folks. So, good night.
Good night.